Welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Greg, the reason a lot of IPAS and Ukrainian communities are moving is because most of the places they were in did not have fire certs. The process can take up to a year, and hence many could remain while the process was ongoing. But once it fails, they have to move. The move to hotels is because they already have fire certs in place. Okay, thanks for that. Why are immigrants being sent to rural Ireland, asks another listener. There are plenty of places in Ireland that can take them, yet we from Donegal are sent to Dublin or Galway to access health services. They're never sent to Dublin or anywhere close to Dublin, says the listener. Why are so many critical of Sinn Féin regarding immigration? They aren't in government. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Greens are, but doesn't get the same criticism. Very strange. Well, they do. The government takes a great deal of criticism on immigration. And Sinn Féin themselves conceded that they got the immigration messaging wrong and clarified their position in relation to that. So the party themselves have recognised the public backlash they had. But I take your point. People knew Ukrainians were in Milford and would be going home sometime, but this refugee centre will be forever. This will be a bigger issue in coming elections than it was in the Euro and local elections. Mulroy Woods can pay for the footpath as they're the only ones making the money from them, says a listener. It's an interesting comment. What politicians are involved and in bringing refugees to Ireland? They need to declare their financial interests in housing refugees. It's an interesting comment. Our government can house refugees but can't find accommodation for our fellow Irish citizens who have houses with defective blocks. Shame on them. Another, can you ask him, are they going to be vetted, as we've been lied to as usual regarding this? There's an issue with vetting really as well too, because it depends where people come from. if someone comes from a particular country, for an example, how do you vet them? You're not going to have proper access to, sometimes the job would be clarifying, you know, people's identity and what have you. But unless they sort of come through Europe and something's happened, what database are you vetting them against? Lots mentioned about vetting and vetting this, that and the other, but think about the reality. You can only vet someone based on their past record, and where is their record? Do you have access to it, and so on and so forth? When an IPAS centre is set up in an area, it'll be a continuous revolving door system. It takes people in, processes them, and when they move on, they take in the next. However, if you place a centre in a rural area like Lough Innure, Gortahawk or Milford, which is already under pressure, lacking resources, no jobs available, maybe the only hotel in the area for what little tourism they get, then of course people are going to have concerns. And listen, we're platforming people's concerns here. I'm not in any way trying to stifle that. I hope I haven't given that impression. That's not the point. That's what we're here for. If people have concerns about anything, it's to platform them and give them an opportunity to have their say. And people are always very respectful in how they express their views. That's the tone of what we get into this show. But it was just my only question was, is that I was kind of, and I'm not from the area, I knew what was going on there. And I'm just was trying to timeline as to why now it was the big story that this was the type of centre it was, when it was clear that that was ongoing since the end of summer. Totally inadequate conditions in Milford School. No money seemingly for years to upgrade the school for the community. In other news, an agreement has been made for the relocation of 150 asylum seekers into the Mulroy Woods Hotel in Milford. Just goes to show that this government has the interests and care of its own citizens well behind the farce of mass immigration into the country. Another caller says, on a separate issue, I'm very worried about the SPHE programme. The secrecy with it towards parents is scary. I don't want my children taught. It will go into school and ask to speak to the principal and ask them what is going to be what is going to be taught to your child. Highlight the areas you have concerns. What don't you want them taught? And say to the principal, I don't want my child to have access to this. So if this is being taught in the school, I want them out of the class. That's the way to do it. We can't rely on, and as useful as they are, public meetings and people having concerns, but there might be concerns, but maybe they're not concerns, and it might be told, but it's not, and there's 8 books, and they might use. We have to, as parents, take control of the situation, and if you have concerns, go into the school, go into the setting, and say what's going on. It's like that conversation we had about nail polish and hair braiding or whatever it was. We are the parents. It's our responsibility. We have to go in and ask in a specific school, if you're concerned, what's being taught, what's going to be taught to my young person. And if you don't like what's being taught, then you have to make sure the school makes provision, if it's possible, for them not to be in that class. That's not going to be resolved at a public meeting in Letterkenny, Milford, Azerbaijan. It can only be really resolved by you going in and satisfying your own concerns with the school. Hi, Greg. After the Trump news, I hear he's going to make golf great again. In other global news that people may have missed, Michael Murphy is back. You could say the Murph wants back on the turf. And the sale of togas and O'Neill shorts will no doubt sell out too. It's purely coincidence that Gladiator 2's out tomorrow. Hashtag Murphy's matches. All right, thanks for that. And you're welcome back. And in studio with me is Declan Boyle. He's the CEO of Donegal Sports Partnership. Good morning, Declan. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for giving this opportunity.
Yeah, and we're announcing on this show, well, I'm accidentally framed that as if we're revealing it. We're not revealing it, but what we're doing on this program now is inviting applications for the club development funding for 2024. So tell us about this funding stream.
Yeah, listen, I suppose I'm CEO of Donegal Sports Partnership, and we have that funded at the minute for all the clubs that are out in Donegal, and we have a vast variety of clubs doing wonderful jobs, keeping people active around the whole county. So we have club development grants that are open and available up until next Thursday, the 14th of November, and there's about 35,000 of a budget available for clubs to go and apply, and that's obviously looking at initiatives to attract people into their club. It's funding for sports equipment, up from €300 minimum up to a maximum of €1,500 that's available for clubs to apply. So it's for sports equipment, the stuff that they need, obviously integration initiatives for people with disability, older adults, and also looking at new communities as well. And we have a lot of new communities in Donegal. And obviously a program as well for mental health and getting people involved in sport and physical activity. And it's there for clubs to avail of, and we want as many clubs to apply as possible.
And how are we defining clubs, if you know what I mean?
Sports clubs that are affiliated to national government bodies, they have to be affiliated. So if it's a GAA club, they're obviously affiliated to the GAA. If it's an FAI soccer club, they're affiliated to the FAI. So that's the affiliation that has to be involved in it. So anybody that's affiliated to their NGB, national government body, they can apply for funding through ourselves. And when they're filling the application, if they're not 100% sure what they're doing, they can pick up the phone and give us a buzz. All the information is on our website as well and on Facebook as well.
But if you go to the bother of starting the application process, you want to make sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and then it can be judged on its merit and not an incomplete application or something.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a difficult thing. You know, we're very conscious that people that are filling in these applications are also running clubs, and they've busy schedules, and they've obviously life outside of being involved in sport clubs as well. So we try to make it as easy and transparent as possible. We do want people applying, obviously, and we also want to make sure that, you know, when they do apply, that they are, there's funding there available for them, and they secure funding for their club.
Up to 1,500, I suppose, on the scale of some of the announcements we've had recently, relatively modest, but that being said, still not insignificant. You know what I mean? Clubs often are trying to spread money in various different places. If there's a membership, trying to keep that low, this could be really quite significant to just maybe either fully funding or finishing off the funding for an initiative they have or a particular piece of equipment or whatever it might be.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And that's the key. You know, obviously we had the sports capital funding and with a large scale sport and infrastructure funding that was announced there recently, and that was a lot of funding for a lot of clubs and around the country. But yeah, listen, it's small compared to the sports capital funding, yeah, for sure. But it may make a difference, you know, if it's €300 or €400 or €500 for a club, they can buy maybe balls, bibs, cones, slalom poles, water balls, anything like that, they make a wee bit of a difference and make life a wee bit easier for coaches. That's the key, really. And it is small money compared to everybody else, but it can make a difference.
No, it's not insignificant. Yeah. That's what I was saying. Yeah. And the words that are coming up are accessibility, integration, inclusion, right? Does that mean that applications with that theme will be looked on more favourably?
Not necessarily. You know, I suppose they are that we have the three themes, really. And as integration, as you say, as mental health, and as obviously their sports equipment as well. So we're very conscious that obviously, things have changed in Ireland. There's a lot of new communities coming into Ireland, different cultures, and we want them obviously to be inclusive. We want clubs to be inclusive and to invite them in and to get them involved in their clubs as well. And so there is that opportunity for new communities, hopefully, and clubs to obviously have some sort of common try days, open days, anything to invite new people into the club. And that's obviously expanding the membership of the club and, you know,
and increasing participation. Yeah,
exactly.
Which is what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
yeah.
It's a relatively narrow window to apply. The portal's open now. Closes at closes at 5 p.m. on Thursday, November 21st. If people want more information about the process, the application process, which they may wish to before they undertake it, the website's there. There's someone on the end of the phone, the email's there, so you let people know how they can contact you.
Absolutely, yeah. So listen, you can contact the office on 074-9116-078, and also the email address is funding@activedonegal.com. So either one of those, pick up the phone. Don't be afraid. Even when you're through the process, if you're not 100% sure, pick up the phone and we can talk you through the process. As I say, we want the money to be used. There's 35,000 euro available, 35,000 available for clubs. We want that to obviously to be used up as much as possible, and clubs to play.
All right, listen, thanks very much for calling in, Declan. I really do appreciate it. We've got those contacts here, of course. If people are more familiar with our contacts, we can pass them on then, and we'll also put them up on our social media. But for now, thanks very much indeed. All right, that's Declan Boyle, CEO of Donegal Sports Partnership. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right, a caller says, "Hi, Greg. I'm away for 2 weeks at the end of November. Do you know if there's any way I can vote before I leave, or is it a case that I will miss the opportunity to vote due to the short notice of calling this election?" Well, who can take part in a postal vote? A postal vote is provided for in respect of certain categories of persons. Gardaí, Defence Forces, diplomats. That's not really going to speak to an awful lot of our listeners. But those who are unable to vote in person at the local polling station because of illness or disability. Electors whose occupation, service, employment makes it likely they'll be unable to vote in person on polling day. Full-time students registered at the home who are living elsewhere while attending education in the state. Anonymous electors or members of the household of the person whose safety would be at risk if their name and address were published on the registers, prisoners. But I'm not sure that covers if you are away on your hollybobs. I don't see a provision for that. So if you are away because it's a holiday, I don't see it's included here. But let me dig a little bit deeper and see what else I can find out for you. Thank you very much for that. All right, Oisin Kelly is joining us very shortly, so stay tuned for that. We're going to be talking about Michael Murphy's return to the Donegal panel. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take a quick break and we'll move on after that. Well, he is back and everyone seems to be celebrating. He's not Donald Trump. He is Michael
That's
Murphy.
That's some comparison. Donald Trump and Michael Murphy.
It wasn't a comparison. It was about the returns this week, right?
Yeah.
So, Michael Murphy's returning with Donegal for the 2025 season. It became public yesterday. Was there any rumblings about this?
Oh, there's been lots of rumblings over
there. But anything firm?
Oh, there's been nothing firm. There's been lots of speculation that Michael was back training, going himself and training really, really hard. And obviously, Donegal aren't due back, I think it's till early December. So Michael has been getting himself in shape with the projected to come back with Donegal in 2025. Obviously, this is something that himself and Jim McGuinness have been talking about for a while. So, yes, there was lots of rumblings and rumours and speculation about what was going on, and all you had to do was talk to a few Glensfully people if you met them out and about at underage training. And but there was nothing ever concrete, so there wasn't until yesterday when one of the media outlets that he actually works for, the BBC, Thomas Niblock, then sort of broke it and it all just escalated and took off after that. So,
he obviously
turned down the punditry work, and then that's what started the.
Why do you think he's coming back? Because he's got an All Ireland title, right? He's got his five Ulsters. He's got five All-Stars, so he's been there, done that. He owes the sport nothing, right? Do you believe that he would be, I don't know the man, motivated to come back with a view to saying, right, I can make this two All-Ireland titles, for an example?
Yeah,
like, do you believe
possibly,
he's come
yeah.
back
yeah.
in the knowledge that, right, he's yeah. looking at what this squad, what was achieved with this squad. He obviously knows Jim McGuinness yeah. well, and he thinks there's another title
well,
in him.
There's
do you
no,
think that's
there's,
his motivation?
There's no doubt Michael Murphy has something to give. Like, even when Michael retired, and you really couldn't question at that stage him retiring for his commitment and the abuse that his body took for the county and for Donegal GAA, but you still even felt at that time that Michael would have had something to give.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Jim McGuinness came in, obviously there was talk, will Michael make a return here? But he did say last year now that he was done. But that has changed. Donegal weren't too far away. Let's be honest. They weren't too far away from an All-Ireland final.
They could be one, two, or three players.
Yeah, they're not. Exactly. And Michael Murphy. Like, bringing Michael in, he still has a lot to contribute. He's still one of the finest footballers. I watched him in the club championship in several games, and he was able to turn matches. And so he still has a lot to contribute. And there's no doubt in Michael's head, because he looks after himself and he trains well. And
he would have a
professional look on everything, including what he does in a sporting environment. So, like, he's not coming back just to be part of a squad. He's coming back to contribute to a team and help them to win.
And he's only 35. I mean, some all-stars this year are older than him. Do you know what I mean?
Player of the year was around about the same age. Yeah, Paul Conroy,
he's
Galway.
Older than him, so you'd be forgiven for. Unless you check his age, you'd be forgiven for thinking he's older, because he's contributed so much
to
the game.
He's been there for so long. Like, he was part of a Donegal senior panel from when he was very, very young. And even he was one of the youngest captains ever to lift the Sam Maguire in 2012 when he done that with Donegal. So it feels that he's been around a lot longer. Maybe that he is older, but he's not. He's only in his mid-30s. And these rules, Greg.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, these rules.
Let me ask you the question, actually, because I'd be very interested in your answer. What rules do and don't come in, right? A lot of people, and people that know a lot about this game, say it will benefit him, right? Do you believe he hardly would have considered the rules as part of this decision, would he?
Well, you'd ask him that now. There may be a backlash. Not so much a backlash, but it may be said that Michael was part of this football review committee and he was a core part of it, where these rules were being brought in, these enhancements were being brought in to make the game more attractive. Maybe he was sitting during that process going, you know what? It might suit me, these news of these. Because the way Michael played, and when you're there and you see it, and he's double marked and treble marked, he wasn't getting too much room. Michael Murphy will have the beating of anybody in a one-on-one situation in this country, hands down. But he was never afforded that opportunity for most of his career. There was a time that happened.
Towards the end of his career, though, did he not?
He was out playing more of a midfield role and pulling strings. So the rules only apply if they move
him back up front.
Well, if Jim McGuinness, what's the plan for Michael Murphy? Yeah. Is the plan around the middle? Is the plan going to leave him up top? I would love to see him up top. Mm-hmm. Love to see him up top. You imagine him, Oisin Gallen, Patrick McBurdy, maybe add Conor O'Donnell in there from Cairn Donagh, or even Niall O'Donnell. Like, that's a potent three that you would have up top that could terrorise any defence. And that's what Donegal supporters are getting excited about. Nobody's really mentioned over the last 24 hours about Michael Murphy playing a role in midfield. It's all about
this 3v3.
But these proposed rule changes haven't come in. If they come in. There is, you don't form a committee like what was put together to find enhancements. And there's a 7 core enhancements to it. I don't think they're all going to come in, but they have to bring some of them in, because there has to be some sort of end product to the work and the effort that was put into it. And it seems to be that this 3v3 situation is going to be one of the rules that comes in. Is that a factor in Michael making a decision to come back? Possibly.
Well, that means that in part of the conversation,
if I was Michael Murphy, I'm just giving my opinion. If I was Michael Murphy and I was sitting in that and I was watching what was going on,
that means that's obviously been part of the conversation with Jim McGuinness. Then,
these managers now are preparing and they're thinking about their preparations, about what they have to do with these new rules coming in. They're not going to get much time to try them because there's no pre-season competitions. There will be challenge matches, but we're not going to see them properly in a competitive arena until the last weekend in January when the league starts.
I think this also really is quite important. It shows the determination of Jim McGuinness as well, in that, often after a season ends, you wonder what's next, but he obviously is fine.
He's looking for nuggets. He's looking for extra nuggets that can take them another step. Another step.
Percentages,
So, like, again, as we said, they weren't too far away from making an All-Ireland final. They won an Ulster title in his first go. And another thing I'm thinking of Michael Murphy as we're talking, even his presence again in the changing room, with all that experience that he has, yes, there is players that he has went to the trenches with before, but there's other players that are in there that, that haven't been involved. So there's other aspects of Michael Murphy
There's also other people that looked after the trenches when Michael wasn't there.
Exactly, yeah, there was. Of course there was. What you want is you want your best players representing Donegal.
Does he go in a captain?
And given everybody the opportunity to play their best and try and get something out of
there. Do you think he's captain?
I think he's captain. Well, Michael was captain for so long. Patrick Baird is the current captain. That's a decision for the management, I suppose, the senior players. I don't think Michael will come back as captain, but listen, you never know. But it's great to have him back, and I don't think I've seen so much on social media and across media and radio and newspapers and different things online about Michael Murphy. I think it was more mad about the comeback than there was about his retirement.
Well, do you know what? There's not many players in this country. There's not many players that get national attention for returning to a county club. Yeah. And he's one of them because he's so special. Or it just adds another little...
It's very exciting, Greg.
Exactly. Another layer of excitement for next season.
If he's going to play in Kerry in January, like there'll be a lot of Donegal supporters who will be quite willing to make that trip down there just to see Michael Murphy back in a Donegal jersey.
Brilliant stuff, Oisín. Exciting times ahead. Thanks very much indeed.
Okay, Greg.
And the scores on tonight, is it?
Scores on tonight. Full of football, full of soccer tonight. What's on tonight? Keith Cowan, Patrick McIlhenny, Mark Connolly, all looking forward to the FA Cup final. Derry City's playing Drogheda United this weekend. We'll also hear from a guy called Andrew Cassidy, who is the man behind the programme City View at the Brandywell. Mm. He's been doing that job for 10 years, but he decided to put a book together where he spoke to past players of Derry and done interviews. So it's out at a good time. It came out a number of weeks ago, and obviously the Cup final, so we thought we'd give Andrew a shout. Sea Rovers and Karamina FC, two clubs you probably never heard of before, Greg, but they're involved in a huge game on Sunday in a Shield competition. They're currently top of Division 2 of any show. And we tried to sort of reach out to clubs locally in a segment that we do. It's the Turn of Sea Rovers in Karamina in any show on this weekend. And there's one other topic on the programme, women's football. Finn Harps under-19 women's are playing Galway on Sunday in the League of Ireland Women's Academy under-19 Shield competition. So we're speaking to their manager, Paddy McLean.
Did Derry go against Drogs as favourites for that game?
They are the big favourites, aren't they? Okay. Drogheda have a bigger game the week after because they're in a relegation promotion playoff. If they lose it, they'll drop. But they're in a cup final. They will be seen as huge underdogs. And Derry will be rightly in his favour. Now, Derry have had disappointment the last few weeks losing out in the league. Is that going to be a factor in their performance at the Aviva on Sunday? You don't know, but we'll see what happens. But
brilliant,
Derry will be... Derry will be big favourites for that.
All right, Oisín, thank you very much indeed for that. Oisín Kelly there. Any views on Michael Murphy's return? Where would you like to see him play? What impact do you think it might have on Donegal in the season ahead? 086 60 25,000. Great to have Michael back, but it is a year too late, I think. If we had him last year, we would have an All-Ireland. I don't know, Oisín, about that. So I think... We'd had a better chance.
Though it doesn't necessarily, just because Michael's there doesn't guarantee, wouldn't have guaranteed that you're going to have an All-Ireland. And we have to wait to see what role he's going to play. Like, obviously, Michael, the age that he is, injuries at this stage too, like, you have to manage your body right.
He's had a couple of years off,
but he has to get back.
It's not made of sugar.
I don't think it's going to be any problem for him to get back up to the level that Inter County's played at. We mentioned these new rules. And obviously it's a lot more taxing on players who are involved in the 11 on one side of the pitch and not so much the guys that have been left up top on 3v3. So there's a lot of other things to factor in. We have to wait and see what role Michael will play. Will he be the man that's going to be leading the way alongside Oisín Gallen, the two men up top from the opening whistle of the match? Or is Michael Murphy going to be seen as the big impact sub? 20 minutes to go, he comes, he lifts everything. So we don't know
it all depends on how his body
reacts to this.
Yes.
And if he can stay injury free.
Yeah.
That's the only concern you would have is if he picks up an injury at the age at times. But that's the science behind it today as well.
I can't say.
Like Anthony McFadden's in there running the show for Donegal in relation to what's going on with the S&C and it's a lot more manageable now than what it was. Yeah. Say when Donegal won there in 2012.
Sure. I mean, I could do that. I can't get out of bed. Yeah.
You would have thought it was Christmas yesterday, the way some people were.
No, you're so excited. All right, Oisin, thank you very much indeed. Jerry McKeever is an independent candidate in the 2024 general election. He's with me now. Jerry, good morning to you. Nice to speak to you.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on. It's my first time on. Thanks
yeah, exactly. It's great to have you on, Jerry. I suppose before we get down to an issue that you're raising, as I've said a number of times on this show, a lot of us talk. Not all of us stick our head up there to have a go at it. Why did you decide to run in this election?
Well, Greg, you know, I'm a barber in town, and I think my ear's very close to the ground. You hear about dysfunctionality in planning and law and order and everything every day. And I think society is disappearing. As Maggie Thatcher once said, there's no such thing as society. We're moving towards that. I think our freedoms and our rights are disappearing to a certain degree. And I just think we're almost expecting things to get gradually worse every day. It becomes normalised, therefore just accepting it. And I think it's time someone actually stood up and said, you know, stop. And I'm sure there's others like me, hopefully, in Donegal standing and another county standing.
Okay, right, yep. And you're putting your name on the ballot paper and people can be able to make that decision. What difference do you think you can make as an independent, Jerry?
Well, you know, I have this idea, if I can actually get voted in, that on the first day, I would love to actually try and find the names, the email addresses of all the new independents, so you can get together, think tank on a new wavelength, because I think we need a radical change in this country. I mean, again, there's a lot of joint. I'm thinking of my policies. I think I'm been getting this call because I had a press release out about the fact people don't feel safe in the streets of Letterkenny and other towns. But joint up thing suggests to me that if we can incentivize our guards to stay in this country, to work in this country, and I think that's achievable through allowing us to build affordable housing, the government putting in massive levels of infrastructure, water and sewage, allows to build houses free of plan permission. And this is one of the ways we can actually incentivize our guards, our teachers, our nurses, our young to stay in the country. I would love to think that in 4 years' time, we could have a country, if we could enact new policies, that our young want to come back to from Australia. They really don't even want to leave here in the first place. Perhaps, you know, Sean, or sorry, Greg, this is too early for us, but I would love to think if I can go up and plant the seed, get a group involved in the group, who could actually get these radical new ideas out there. Maybe the time the next election comes around, we might have a completely radical way of thinking. For me, the easiest suggestion is let's build affordable housing.
Talk to me about your concerns on how safe people feel on the streets. Obviously, from what you've said, this is what people are saying to you. What are they saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, you hear all the time, we'll not walk the streets tonight. I mean, that's basically what I keep hearing on maybe every day. You know, if you bring the topic up at all, people would walk the streets and make Letterkenny. It's very, very sad. I mean, we have a smashing town here. But law and order isn't what it used to be. And we need to incentivize our guardy, I think. You know,
Jerry, can I just, before we talk about how we salute, I just want to get down to how people feel, Jerry. Because, you know, obviously, with Community Garda information on this programme and other information we get from Gardaí and from members of the public, are the streets of Letterkenny unsafe, in your view? Or do people feel... Just one second, Jerry, sorry. Are the streets actually unsafe, or do you believe that people feel they're unsafe?
There could be a little bit of both. Now, Greg, you know what I mean? Certainly, people feel that way, and if the perception is there, we should do something about it. You know, we have seen a decrease in the number of Gardaí. We need more Gardaí. There's barracks closing all over the place. So, you know, is law and order present in this country anymore? It could be perception and what's in us, but I don't think it's all perception, Greg. The perception comes from somewhere, you know. And surely if that perception is there at the moment, we need to nip this in the bud. If it's not as real as people think it is, we need to nip this in the bud. We can't wait for this to develop even further. You know, there was an attack down the street again Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And you know that's not basic general knowledge around the time that it happened.
I remember going out in Letterkenny for years, and there was always, you know, scraps on the streets outside takeaways, inside the pubs. random one-punch attacks we've been covering on this show for years and years and years. That's why I'm not from Letterkenny, Jerry. That's why I'm asking, is the town less safe, or do people feel it's less safe? And what do you think is making people feel it's less safe? What has changed in the town, Jerry, that makes you think, and as I say, it's only based on maybe what people are telling you. Is it less guardy? Is that why people feel less safe now?
Well, you always hear people saying, what happened to community policing? We don't see guardy in the street. And I don't blame the guards. That's, you know, we have a diminishing number. We lost over 5% of our guardy in a 3.5-year period up until August last year. To change the topic slightly, we lost 40% of our traffic core in the last 15 years. You know, our guardy numbers are diminishing, and this is part of the problem. And, you know, I mean, you know, as I say, you know, drugs are a major problem. You know, there was a program there done about the streets of Dublin about a year and a half ago in RTE that basically explained that O'Connell Street and its artery streets are violent drug dens. Mm-hmm. And Helen McAtee walked down the street there maybe 4 or 5 months ago into O'Connell Street and said she felt safe. She had a couple of bodyguards behind her. Of course, she felt safe in broad daylight.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone felt for that one. In fairness, Jerry, even people that support her.
No, but it displays to me the fact that, you know, the government are actually won't even admit the problem exists. The main thing is, let's say the perception is there that the streets are not safe at night, and let's say that perception is a slight exaggeration on the situation. Surely it should be nipped in the bud. Surely, look at O'Connell Street, the government must realise that this problem exists. Must acknowledge it and must do something about it.
Do you think the changing demographic is leading to this fear? Seeing people of different nationalities in different areas of the town. We contact the Gardaí regularly on this when things come up. There's no overrepresentation of different communities in the crime figures, and there's no sizable increase in crime actually in and around Letterkenny. So I'm not saying it's happening, right? I'm just wondering, if it is somewhat perception, is it other people that have lived here all their lives, or are people unsettled by a change in the cultural landscape of Letterkenny?
Well, Greg, like a lot of problems, it's not one thing in particular. You know, there's an amalgamation of different things, and use that word unsettled. People do feel unsettled. You know, I mean, like I would love to avoid the banana, potential banana skin and the hot potato that is immigration, but that's a factor as well. And a lot of what's going on in immigration is perception.
I've purposely tried to bring it in so it's not a banana skin for you, if you know what I'm saying. Because if that's what people are feeling, right? So say, for instance, that's what people feel. So there's a couple of things. We need to address it, right? So is it about more policing to make people feel secure? Is it about better integration so different communities understand themselves better? Is it ensuring that one particular area does not become predominantly of one particular culture or race as other? Because we've seen historically, we've seen how that can create the disquiet and discomfort in the community. So if that is an issue, we have to talk about it. It's not a banana skin. If that is part of it, then what can we do to resolve it? Because we are all going to seemingly have to live in the same space.
Yeah, well, you use the word integration, Greg, and that for me, that's the most important part of the immigration policy. You know, we have to integrate. We will have racism if that doesn't happen. I have a friend, Noel Leslie, who owns a chess club in town, and half the people in that chess club are Irish, half are from other countries, and they get on a housing fair. We must move towards integration. You know, there is an area in town down behind where the old Garda Barracks was, down behind where the Metropolitan was, that's now at this stage basically just one community of people. And, you know, this potential ghettoisation, it can't be good. I mean, immigration per se is not a bad thing at all, but I mean, it's the way the government are handled. We heard about the Balacadreen thing, etc., and some of that perception, some of it's real. You know, we need to have a better policy on this, and governmentally it's not been handled well. I mean, we all know that people are becoming rich out of the policies, etc. Personally, I don't think it's right that people come into the country, give money and say, look, there's money, do nothing for 2-3 years. It can't be helping their mental health. It can't be helping their sense of self-worth. It does not serve the immigrant neither, and it doesn't serve us.
Right, so if I'm in Letterkenny and I want to vote for you, right, so what am I voting for? Because, you know, obviously you're not extreme in your views. You're talking about integration. It seems that you're talking about people that come into Ireland being able to work and integrate and contribute to society, unless I've picked you up wrong. So really the thrust of what you're saying is that we need to make sure policy promotes understanding and inclusion, and that there's more Gardaí to make people feel more secure. Now, if I've misrepresented you in any of that, Gerry, let me know. But that seems to be what you're asking the people of Letterkenny to vote for you for. On this particular topic,
yes, of other topics, obviously, of course. But I mean, you know, I think, like some would say, you know, I would love to chase the bridge up in Letterkenny. I'd love to do what I can. That knows what I can do. I can certainly try. If there's areas to exploit, if I get elected, I'll look there. Defect the block is a massive part of my policy. Of course, it's everyone's. It can't not be in Donegal. But I mean, the rest of my policy really concerns national, like policing, like affordable housing. Like infrastructure in general. You know, I mean, Greg, these things are not national policies. These things are all local. We cannot fix policing in Donegal, anywhere in the country, if we don't fix it nationally. We can't fix the affordable housing problem and our young moving to Australia because they can't afford houses in Donegal if we don't fix it nationally. The policies have to be there in Dublin. So these policies are all local policies.
You know,
that's
funny
what you
thing is, Gerry, in terms of people joining. I think actually, sorry, I'll come back to that. If either of my children said to me, "I want to join the Guards," the reason I would discourage them is because of the flack they might get from the public. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I don't see anything out there about that. I think it's a very, very tough job. I think they're seen as the whipping boys of government policy or what have you, boys and girls, but you know what I mean by that. It's not about where they could live necessarily. It's not about how much money they get. For some reason, and I think it goes back to maybe the role they had through COVID, it's not a job I'd like to see my children do, not least because the Guards, it seems like they're very little protection, and it's not a safe job either. I think that's really the challenge in recruitment in An Garda Síochána.
It is. Like I said before, you know, Greg, it's never just one thing. There's not one thing wrong. When you look at a problem to solve, there's four or five facets. And you said exactly the right thing in the sense that, like, I believe in the social media. You look at those riots were in Dublin, what was it, 8-9 months ago now. You know, you see these things on social media. You won't see where the Guards been spat at. You won't see where the Guards been hit. You won't see where the Guards been tummy. You won't see where the young fellow met on the bus and told the bus driver, you know, what country are you from? Go back to your own country. This bus driver's working, paying taxes. You don't see that. What you see in social media is where a Guard brings a baton down on some guy's shoulder. That's what you see in social media. You don't see the preamble. You know, it's very uneven. And social media, Greg, look, maybe I'm a bit of a troglodyte. I would go back to the past any day. I think social media is damaging us to a massive degree. The messages are all wrong. So Gardaí have that to get around to. But I think we have to try and move towards, you know, highlighting that fact that Guards, I've actually some people tell me in some of the comments, you know, on my videos, my TikTok videos, that Gardaí are terrorists. That's how extreme people feel.
Yeah, I wonder how you'll get on, Gerry, because you're quite moderate, you know. And it'll be interesting to see if it resonates with the voting public.
Yeah, I think we have to deal at the moment with the laws we've got. You know, I mean, we are obliged to take 30,000 people into the country at the moment due to their politicians voted that in a number of months ago. And immigration per se is not a bad thing if it's handled properly. But I think in the meantime, that should also be our limit. And we should work with what we've got in the country, work very hard to integrate the people we've got here. And, you know, I mean, you know, I said earlier that immigration is a hot potato. And the sense it is for me because, you know, there's people out there who think more extremely than I do. And they won't vote for me probably, Greg. And I have to come out and say what I think. I can't just sort of gloss over and say, you know, I think this, I think that. They're not going to go to doorsteps and tell a different truth. You've got to come out and say exactly what you think. And that's my stance on it.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, thanks for joining us. We'll chat again, of course, over the next 3 weeks. Gerry McKeever, independent candidate in the 2024 general election, which takes place on November the 29th, which is not far away. Just 3 weeks by the time the Dáil is dissolved tomorrow. Some of your comments. Greg, the Gardaí in Letterkenny are too busy catching boys drunk in a public place. Same boys all the time. Cops know them all. And boys landing in here for the weekend from cities in Northern Ireland and causing trouble going home. And Gardaí don't even chase them. They go for the low-hanging fruit, the local drunks and troublemakers, who in fairness are usually harmless. And they let boys come in here from NI at the weekends and cause trouble. And they can't be bothered to drag them back in over the border. That is the problem. Public order offences are easy work for them. in fairness, there was a situation maybe somewhat similar to that, allegedly, in Donegal Town, and it is being pursued through the courts, but that's your view, and I respect it. Greg, it's Irish teenage lads that are making the streets feel unsafe. This uptick has been happening for years, as each generation seems to be acting worse than the last. Questions to be made? How many asylum seekers, migrants, and people from Ukraine in Letterkenny? This is not being asked or answered. That's why I'm trying to be very careful with the language here, because if you look at the representation in courts and the demographics of those in courts, it is predominantly Irish people in courts for public order offences and what have you. But if there is a perception there, and if it's not reality or somewhere in between, one has to address that as well. Greg and Highland leaning so far left, they're almost out of sight. Okay, don't know what that means, really. If that means speaking to a general election candidate and talking about their mandate, and not their mandate, but their platform, their what they're standing on, if that is left-leaning, I'd call it balanced. Now, I'm not sure if those views were left or right, because I really don't subscribe to that kind of stuff. But are you saying I shouldn't be able to speak to people who are standing for election and have certain views? Is that what you'd prefer? Doesn't sound like democracy or an open media to me. Greg, regarding your opinion and it not being safe joining the Garda profession, that's why they're trained to combat crime in every country. Give them a good salary. Yeah, indeed. It's I can only speak honestly as an individual. Hi, Greg. Jerry's a man of honesty and decency, and I wish him the best in the election. He has a book published on Amazon called Benocracy, and his ideas have so much common sense and brilliant ideas, but I fear the way the world is now, people prefer controversy over good, honest living. Are people saying the streets are unsafe because there are lots of different nationalities about nowadays? One can't go by speculation. This is exactly the reason why I'm trying to have the conversation out in public. Is that why people feel unsafe, or why is it? Because all of it can be looked at and addressed, and probably should be. Right, let's take a break, then the news, and then Martin McDermott will rejoin us to talk about those developments on the DCB scheme.